You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Grave. Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Grave. I'm your host today. At Food Integrity Now, we envision a world without GMOs, a thriving world where our food is safe for our children and our grandchildren. If you share this vision, go to our website and join us. Food Integrity Now has really been a labor of love for us over the past 3 years. We'd like to ask your assistance. If you'd like to advertise with us, please contact us at info@foodintegritynow.org or just click on the donate button if you'd like to assist in that way. Our show today is brought to you in part by Biolumina Spirulina. We also have a very special surprise for you at the end of this interview. Enjoy the show. Hi, it's Carol again. I don't endorse many products, but Biolumina Spirulina is one product that I highly endorse. Spirulina is called a superfood because its nutrient content is more potent than any other food. It has been proven that you could actually live on this product. Biolumina Spirulina is the premium spirulina. It contains more phycocyanin than any other spirulina. Phycocyanin is a powerful antioxidant. It is grown cleanly without any synthetics, GMOs, and pesticide, and it's also a proven immune booster and is a radiation protectant and cleanser. I've been taking this product for over a year, and I feel like it's one of the finest whole food supplements on the market. To find out more about Biolumina, go to www.newphoenixrising.com/beingwell. Once again, that's www.newphoenixrising.com/beingwell. Or just go to the show page and click on the link. You're going to really love this product. My guest today is Dr. Vandana Shiva. Vandana is a scientist, philosopher, feminist, author, environmentalist, activist, and a one-woman movement for peace, sustainability, and social justice. She was trained as a physicist and studied quantum theory. She is also the founder of Navdanya and the author of many books, and her most recent book is entitled Making Peace with the Earth. We are going to be talking with her today from New Delhi, India. Vandana, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Food Integrity Now.
My pleasure too.
Vandana, I'm so excited to have you on our show today, and I wanted to start with something that's very current, and last weekend was the March Against Monsanto, and over 2 million people around the world marched against the monopolization of our food supply, and I'm wondering what you thought about this as far as how effective is a march like this?
I think it's not the physical fact of the march that's important. I think it's the raising of consciousness of people. For the first time globally, people across the world are aware that there's one giant corporation messing up our food everywhere, destroying our seeds everywhere. And I don't think that kind of connection has been made before. I think the second thing about the March Against Monsanto is that it's so totally self-organized. You know, typical global organizing, okay, you raise millions of dollars, you prepare the same kind of actions, everyone does the same thing. Yeah, everyone was doing their own thing. And that is the process of integrity of life, but it's also the process of integrity of democracy. And given that this was the first time, people were focusing on Monsanto, people were acting internationally on their own volition, I think shows us the potential of the kind of change people and citizens can bring if they continue to use that power they have.
I totally agree. And I watched a video this morning with Marianne Williamson, and she was at a march in Venice, California. And she spoke how this is so much bigger than just the monopolization of our food supply.
thing she said is, and I quoted her, "This is about a multinational corporate matrix that has sucked the soul of American capitalism, has turned the American government into its own cash cow, and if allowed to continue, does nothing short of threatening life on Earth." Do you agree?
I more than agree. And that's the reason I've spent the last 26 years of my life preparing the ground to defend the alternatives that Monsanto is trying to destroy, calling out on the destruction they're engaged in, whether it be the destruction of seed and biodiversity. We used to have 1,500 varieties of cotton. Monsanto has reduced it to one GMO BT cotton. They've taken over 95% of the cotton seed supply. They shot up the prices of cotton through their intellectual property rights and royalty collection by 8%. And those are the trends of consolidation of the seed chain and seed supply through intellectual property rights and patents that have pushed more than 270,000 Indian farmers to suicide. But look at the destruction of democracy. We witnessed what they did with the labeling laws. Now they go to the Senate and try and pass a law so no state in the U.S. can have its own democratic right under a federal structure to protect its citizens. And there's a huge movement to remove the Monsanto Protection Act. Monsanto senators blocked that too. So, yes, they have stolen our democracy. They've stolen our governments and they've stolen parliaments in many places. Only in a few places, the parliaments act independent of them. The Indian parliament did a study looking at the suicide and said GMOs and Monsanto just have no place in this country of tiny, small farmers. The European Parliament has been alert, and that is why a large part of Europe is free. But then now they're trying to use the European Commission to make diverse seed, local seed, open source seeds illegal. So they're attacking on every front, the labeling front, owning seed, and if there is seed that is free, say that's illegal, that's a crime, suing farmers like Bauman, who bought grain and planted a crop and said, even that is not allowed. We are the masters of the universe. And this basically is totally a threat to life on Earth and freedom.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. And how did this all get started? I know that you went to a conference in 1987, I think it was,
right,
a conference on biotechnology. Do you want to share with our listeners what happened at that conference?
Sure. You know, I'm trained as a physicist. I did my doctorate work on the foundations of quantum theory from Canada. And agriculture was very far from life. But I started to look in 84 because of the disaster in Bhopal where a Union Carbide pesticide plant leaked and the extremism in Punjab, which was the land of the Green Revolution, and realized doing a study for the United Nations University that the old war industry had become the agrochemical industry and was now trying to move to control seed. So when I was invited to a meeting in Geneva and Bourgeois on the laws of life, on the new biotechnologies, the industry was there and they said three things. They said, A, we are too small. All these giants felt they were too small. They should look at the soil microorganism to learn what smallness is about. So we've got to consolidate. And we'd be five companies by the turn of the century controlling food and health. And it's the ones who have the largest patents who will control the biggest market share. And to get patents on seed, we need to do genetic engineering. They didn't say it in those words, but they did. Anyway, we can. We are now inventors of seed because we've added a new gene. And then they said, of course, it isn't good enough if a bit of Europe and a bit of US creates this kind of monopolistic and false market claim through pretending you have created seeds and life. They said we need a global law. And then I made a commitment that day I was going to save seeds and I'm going to fight against every corporation that tries to patent seed, genetically modify seed, and pirate traditional knowledge. So we fought three cases against these giants, including one against Monsanto, which stole an old Indian wheat variety from India. Because it has low gluten. But along the way, very rapidly, it became evident that Monsanto was a very big driving force. And they have specified in 1995, after the World Trade Organization was established, that the laws on intellectual property of seed in the WTO, they wrote it They were the patient, the diagnostician, and physician all in one. He said, we wrote the law, we took it to our government, and our government imposed it on the rest of the world. That is how they became global players. Destroying farmers, destroying our seeds and biodiversity, and destroying our food system and the integrity of our food. And they twisted every institution to get those false laws implemented. The interesting thing is, that 1995 law was to be reviewed in 1999 because it's so wrong. How can you say you've invented seed by moving one gene? They have scuttled that mandatory review of the World Trade Organization, an issue we still need a very big movement on. But we've started a global seed freedom campaign to connect these multiple dots, the different facets of Monsanto's empire, to show that the GMO questions, the patent, the labeling question, the hijack of our democracies and theft of our governments, that these are all one piece of one onslaught. And a very strange kind of economy, which is everything but economy, strange kind of free trade, which is everything but free. It is the ultimate dictatorship, as I said in my message of solidarity for the March Against Monsanto. It is an unimaginable dictatorship. And that is why I'm so glad people around the world are rising. And I know it'll be the women and the children who will say enough is enough.
Why do you say that?
Why do I say that? Because they don't hesitate. You know, their minds are not so brainwashed.
I agree. I think it, you know, a mother protecting her child and wanting the best for her child and not wanting to feel this season, she's gonna take action.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the labeling campaign in California grew from that spirit, and this march, or moms marching against for labeling across the U.S. on 4th of July will be another occasion for people to come out and say, you can't poison. And evidence is now there. Canadian researchers, totally independent of industry, find that even though they said the BT toxin in GMOs degrades and doesn't survive in our bodies, they found the BT toxin in the blood of pregnant women and in the blood of fetuses. A recent study in Brasilia at a Brazilian university has shown that the BT toxin is invading red blood cells. So we are talking about very far-reaching consequences.
Yeah, yes, we are. So back to the WTO. So when did they come up with intellectual property treaty? Was that in 95 that they did that?
It was established in 95 because before that, you used to have something called the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs. And that had something called a Uruguay Round. It's during that period, corporations like Monsanto joined together in what they call the Intellectual Property Committee and organized globally to basically write a new treaty on what would be intellectual property. Before that, countries wrote their intellectual property laws. They defined what would be patented. And in India, we couldn't patent life. And we couldn't patent medicine as a product. We could only patent a process, which is why Indian medicines were cheap. $200 for a year of AIDS treatment versus $2,500. $10,000 for a month of cancer treatment versus $150,000. So we are talking about genocidal monopolies. And they worked through the late 80s, and they worked up to 91 when the draft of this agreement was then sealed. And it was called the Dunkel Draft Text because Dunkel was the Director General of the GATT, the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs. And Dunkel said very clearly, it's a take it or leave it text. I've got this final text now. You accept it or don't. And no, it wasn't shown to the world. US and Europe said, fine, we go with it. But this clause of review was added. And then all this became the World Trade Organization in January of 1995 with the signing of the agreement in Marrakesh in 1994.
And so many people are unaware of this. I think
most people are totally unaware of it, and they have deliberately created both genetic engineering as well as in patenting of life a language that is so mystifying that you assume you have to be a lawyer or a scientist to understand. but you don't have to. I'm not a lawyer, and I could see through this game that you move a gene and you claim you've invented that life form and all its future generations. It's like someone taking a piece of furniture into a house and saying, I brought this chair, therefore I made this building, and now you will pay me rent. You'd get thrown out if a mover of a chair tried to own the building. But we have allowed a mover of a gene, which is like a chair in the context of life, and said, okay, you own life. You own 20 years of the future generation. And you own not just that particular variety, you now can claim dozens of patent claims for everything you claim. So all they've really presented to us in 20 years is crops that are Roundup resistant, where a toxic gene is put to resist Roundup, and a Bt toxin crop, which puts a toxic gene for fighting pests. But both have failed. Bt crops have created super pests, and the herbicide-resistant crops have created superweeds. Half of America's farmlands are now taken over by superweeds. And Monsanto is recommending spray Roundup. Roundup, the devastating herbicide. Spray Agent Orange, which was used in the Vietnam War. So they have turned food, which is what makes our bodies. Food is the web of life. They've turned food into the ultimate war zone.
Yes, I agree they have. And, you know, it's interesting because I live in a small town in Colorado, and I still run across people every day that don't even know what a GMO is. And I think it's very much by design. How do you think humanity has gotten where they are today? You know, we've created what we've created, so we have to be accountable. Where do we go from here?
Well, I think the first reason why the person on the street doesn't know what a patent is, what a GMO is because these corporations have deliberately crafted a language to alienate our everyday life, our everyday food, our everyday seed from us. So they never talk about seed. They talk about intellectual property. Now, how on earth would the person on the street imagine that when they're talking intellectual property, they're really about in your garden? Or when they're saying GMOs and saying it's a technology, it's the toxic food they're going to force feed. So they've deliberately erased our knowledge, our memory, our imagination. And the way we go forward is by reclaiming all those things. The knowledge of our bodies, the knowledge of our planet, the knowledge of our seeds, the knowledge of what's good eating, and then find ways to act. Now, I've been deeply inspired by Gandhi, who fought for our freedom, along with the millions who marched for freedom. And there are two things I've learned from him. First, to define freedom, you don't take the definition of the master. You define freedom in terms of the life you have to live. That is the self-organized freedom that the march against Monsanto was expressing. Second thing he said was, and when unjust law prevents you from acting, it is your duty not obey. He practiced this against apartheid in South Africa the first time ever. It was on a 9/11, 1901. This is what was practiced by the civil rights movement in the US. This is what he practiced when he came back to India and they tried to monopolize the salt. And he says, we will make our own salt. We will not obey your laws. Nature gives it for free. And we need it for our survival. And he walked to the beach, picked up salt and said, we will not obey. We take inspiration from that and say, we will do the seed satyagraha, which means the fight for truth of the seed, like he did the salt satyagraha, the fight for truth about the right to make salt. And we've used that to constantly prevent the government from implementing laws on behalf of Monsanto. In 2004, they tried to make indigenous seed illegal. And I traveled the length and breadth of the country. And people signed up, and prime minister. And I said, remember, we are in the land of Gandhi. And Gandhi has taught us not to obey unjust law. So you can put this law in practice, but we are not going to obey it. And this many people are aware. So how on earth are you going to put this many people into jail? And non-cooperation has to be a very big part of fighting consumption, whether it is non-cooperation at the level of seed or at the level of food. Because at the level of seed, they use intellectual property rights and patents to make it illegal for you to have your own seed. At the level of food, they're using pseudo-hygiene measures that treat local cheese making as dangerous, that treat bag making as dangerous, that treat free-range pigs as feral animals, which would be a threat to health, and backyard chicken as the ones that will kill you, and it was the factory chicken that unleashed the H1N1 virus. So whether it is around food or seed, we have to commit to the integrity of seed and the integrity of food. And for this year, the seed freedom movement globally, and people can find out more about this on the seedfreedom.in website. They can also find reports of Navdanya on the failure of GMOs. It's a report called The GMO Emperor Has No Clothes, and a new report on seed freedom. We celebrate 2nd of October, which is Gandhi's birth anniversary, to remember the ideas of self-organized freedom and non-cooperation as an ethical, moral duty. And 16th October, which is World Food Day, which is the day we should celebrate our food, that fortnight is a fortnight of action for seed freedom and food freedom. And we are telling people, just plant gardens everywhere with seeds that are not patented seeds, that are not GMO seeds. And let the gardens be our declaration of resistance and our declaration of hope.
Wonderful. You know, I wonder, you seem so optimistic in a world that is so full of chaos, and so many people are feeling defeated because the corporations own the government, and I think a lot of people feel like they don't have their own personal power to affect change. Can you speak to that?
You know, personal power to make change comes from being the change you want to see. And every step in doing that makes you that much more empowered. So if you just decide, I'm not going to touch anything that has any possibility of a GMO, you make that extra effort to make sure you and your family and your children are getting the right food. You try and create the systems, if they've disappeared, to make good food available by working with farmers, gardeners. But the second very, very important thing is that optimism and hope is not about the power of those who destroy. It is about the potential of power of those who are trying to protect that is precious in life, both in the life of the earth and our lives as human beings. And one has to be realistic. I'm not idealistic in a stupid way. Probably I've done the longest work on understanding the power of Monsanto. And yet, every seed that we save gives me new power. Because every new seed tells me I am alive. I am free.
And I agree. It's, you know, when I walk through our American grocery stores, I see 80% to 90% of all the food in the grocery store has been genetically modified. It can be a little bit discouraging, and yet I am hopeful, and I hear what you're saying about, you know, planting seeds is the key, and patent reform. Yeah. As far as patent reform goes, how do we accomplish that?
Well, by many ways. You know, the cases we have fought against biopiracy have made a huge contribution to the recognition that there's traditional knowledge that needs protection and can't be stolen and claimed to be an invention. I think at every level, we have to question the overreach of Monsanto. And I think we need to organize to challenge that Bauman case, Monsanto versus Bauman, talking about seed freedom. Now, we have just released on the 17th of May, the law of the seed, which is both a scientific testimony, it's a legal testimony, but it's also an ordinary citizen's activist tool to say, okay, this is what the seed is, then this is what I need to do to protect the seed and my freedom. And we are calling on people to deal with patent reform also by creating seed freedom zones everywhere. Because if Gandhi could reform the salt laws by saying we will continue to make salt, we can reform the patent laws by saying good seed, open source seed, seed that we have inherited from thousands of years of breeding from nature and our ancestors, that seed we will plant, and we won't allow anyone to try and criminalize us for this.
Right. We recently interviewed Fred Kaufman. Are you familiar with him? He Bet the Farm. And it's an interesting book, and he agrees that patent reform is greatly needed. But he also talked about how the price of food is being regulated by the commodities market, and yes. how that is creating world hunger. Do you agree?
Totally. So there are really three aspects of the crisis of food. The first is that the seed is being monopolized through this very false patent law that allows life forms to be patented as if they were inventions. The second is the control of agribusiness on agriculture, like the Cargills and the ADMs, who drive down the prices that farmers get even while they increase the cost of production. They force you to buy more pesticides, fertilizers, machinery, etc. And then when they come to buy the grain from that farmer who's locked in with them, they buy cheap, as a result of which farmers are losing constantly. And then those same Cargills trade on commodity markets, speculating on our food. And food is then pulled out of the reach of the human people, population. So food prices have jumped fourfold. And for the poor person who was eating one meal a day, they're eating a quarter meal a day. That is very much at the root of hunger.
And I agree. And I was just appalled to find out that there's no such thing in the commodities market as insider trading. It's totally legal.
Well, just as much as on every field we have antitrust law. And yet the one case brought by DuPont against Monsanto was quietly closed by the Justice Department. So there's no anti-trust monopoly, and there's no insider trading in speculation on commodities, on food commodities. And in a way, the whole system is so rigged for five seed companies and five agribusiness companies and grain traders. The interesting thing is Monsanto wrote the intellectual property treaty on seed to allow patents on seed, and Cargill wrote the agriculture agreement of the WTO. So what is called global free trade is really a Monsanto-Cargill non-free trade agreement.
Yes, and Cargill, isn't that the largest seed trader in the world?
No. Monsanto is the largest seed trader in the world. Cargill was in the seed business but has sold off its seed business globally to Monsanto. In the U.S., they still sell seed, but in around the world, Cargill seed is now Monsanto. Cargill is the biggest grain trader in the world, and they bought up the second biggest company, which used to be called Continent.
Okay. Well, regardless, it's certainly is a monopoly.
It's a very serious monopoly on the most vital thing to life, our food.
Correct. And I wanted to talk a little bit also about a subject that's near and dear to my heart, and that is the bees. Recently, the European Union has banned certain pesticides and neonicotinoids because of the declining bee population.
Sure.
What's it going to take for other countries to do the same?
Well, the interesting thing is Monsanto has bought up the leading bee research institute in the United States. So no independent research will come out.
I saw that.
So, of course, on the one side, there's a pesticides. But in my view, a genetically engineered BT crop with toxic pollen, which was proven at university to killing the monarch butterfly, it also has a role in decline of bee populations. In fact, a person who provides bees, bee honey to Navdanya, the movement I started in India, wrote to me and said, my God, thank goodness Navdanya's working, because in this area where BT cotton's grown, all the bees have gone. We don't get honey anymore. So I think we cannot afford to ignore the BT crops as major contributors to the crisis that the bees are facing, along with the pesticides.
Yeah, so now they've come out with, BeeLogix has come out with a robot bee, and I understand that Monsanto has bought that company.
I'm sure they'd buy everything, but a poor robot bee will never have the intelligence.
It seems like every so-called problem Monsanto has the answer for: drought, climate change. You know, they can genetically engineer a seed that will accommodate any of those problems.
That's not at all true.
I know, but they want us to believe it's true.
Yeah, because we've done a report, the 1,500 patents on climate resilience that Monsanto and friends have, none of them are genetic engineering of a climate tree, because you can't. It's too complex a trait. It's what's called a multi-genetic trait. The reason they have only two traits, the herbicide resistant, Roundup resistance, and the BT toxin, is because these are single gene traits for producing toxins. So what they do is they steal the climate resilient crops from farmers who have bred them and maybe put a toxic gene through BT and say we've engineered climate. No, they steal climate resilient crops.
Yes. And then we have people like Bill Gates, you know, who's a pretty powerful person, speaking about the benefits of GMOs and how genetic engineering is going to feed the world.
Well, we just on 1st of May launched a campaign because he has financed $15 million to the idea of GMO bananas with iron enrichment. And there's one scientist in Australia who got all this money. This GM banana is already getting patented by the scientists. And countries like India, which have hundreds of banana varieties, and these are grown everywhere in every garden, if they're patented, we will see in banana cultivation what we saw in the cotton cultivation. Patents, royalties, debt, suicides. But worse, we have so many foods, our rich iron, which if only women were being empowered to grow their gardens with iron-rich foods and nutrition-rich food. We need nutrition gardens everywhere, biodiversity gardens everywhere. So we started a campaign to stop the GMO banana project. And I basically wrote, I said, one rich man, arrogant to hell, and one arrogant scientist want to take over all the biodiversity of the world with their ideas of a failed technology, an idea of an engineering paradigm which cannot apply to the complexity of ecological systems and life forms. So there is a problem, serious problem with Bill Gates.
Yes, I agree. And I get that all the time where people say to me, well, how are we going to feed the world? And the second thing I get is organics are too expensive.
So on the first, how do we feed the world? The GM soya and corn in the U.S., only 1% goes for food. The rest goes for biofuel and animal feed. Globally, corn and soya, only 10% goes for food. The rest goes for biofuel and animal feed. So we are not talking about feeding the world with this kind of monoculture commodity system. We're talking about feeding profits. We're talking about feeding an industrial empire. We're not talking about food. 80% of the food today comes from small farms to 2030. This is Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations data. And in India, in Navdanya, because I've been saving biodiversity, because I've been promoting ecological agriculture, and when we save seeds, we ask farmers to grow as much diversity in their crops. We are now finding that the more diverse a farming system, the more nutrition it produces per acre. In terms of food, we have a double and tripling of output. Usually output is not measured. Only the yield of a single commodity, like corn or soya, is measured. But food requires multiple sources of nutrition. Food in a balanced diet requires diversity on the farm and diversity in the diet. And in nutritional terms, of the most important nutritional deficiencies, like iron, like vitamin A, like calcium, we're finding 5 to 6 times more nutrition availability if you intensify biodiversity and intensify ecology rather than intensifying chemicals and intensifying capital inputs to farming. So that machinery is a commodity-producing system that's not feeding the people. We need gardens and farms that actually feed people.
Agree. And what about the elitism that the biotech companies are trying to promote?
Now, before chemical farming, everything was organic. So quite clearly, it couldn't have been elite because it was everybody's food.
Right.
The war chemical industry then became the agrochemical industry and worked out a system to subsidize these chemicals in order to push them. Because why would anyone buy costly fertilizer if they could make their own compost? So they used the subsidy structure, which is $400 billion in the rich countries. That's more than a billion a day. And with that subsidy, they lower the price of costly food. That's why chemical food is cheap. It's not that organic is elite. It's that chemical food and industrial food and GMO food is stealing our tax money to artificially lower the price, to artificially make it cheap, and then make us mixes. So what we need is a true cost accounting. What we need is the true price of food. And we're working on that in Navdanya. And groups around the world are working on it. The price of cheap food is a false price. If you add the subsidies, if you add the environmental damage, and you add the public health damage.
Right, and the public health damage is one that I focus on. You know, I say, have you priced cancer lately? You know, and I personally think it's a matter of priority. What are you going to spend your money on? And, you know, I think especially in America that we have chosen to distract ourselves by spending our money on electronics and things and not really making our food a priority. And I think we need to get back to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, people are willing to spend hundreds on, and $2 on an organic meal, this is too costly.
Right. It doesn't make sense to me. So what do you think about the National Labeling Bill? There's a provision in this bill, because I've read it, and I know it'll change, but the way it is right now, that would exempt GMO yeast and GMO vaccines.
From labeling.
Those are two of the exemptions in the bill.
So, of course, yeast would then affect all bread making, all beer making, and all of that.
Wine making.
And on the vaccines, in any case, I mean, it wouldn't come under GMO food.
Well, I think the fact that they're putting the GMO vaccines as an exemption in there, it makes me wonder.
They're not putting vaccines into food, which is what Bill Gates is after.
Right. That's a concern for me.
Sure. No, I mean, if that is the case, and it is to be edible, then that exemption is totally wrong.
Yeah. And do you, what's your thought on that national labeling?
Well, you know, I haven't read the national labeling bill, but I think if it's preventing states from making their own laws that have higher standards, then it is totally wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, I personally think that I think labeling is a good idea, but I also wonder if it's not a bit of a distraction, because I feel like we should be going for banning.
Well, of course we should be going for banning, but in these things, you know, especially in your country when it's so far reached that so much of the corn and soya is GM, labeling becomes the first move towards banning. In India, we managed to have a moratorium put on the first product in food, the GMO aubergine. And there we could call for a ban.
Yeah. But do you think that if this national labeling bill passes, do you think that will have a big effect?
Well, you know, I think this national bill has been, you know, I don't know if you saw the correspondence earlier where the group of companies that had financed to block the Californian labeling.
Oh, yes.
Were the companies that joined to move this national bill thinking they'd preempt states.
Right.
So if that is the intention and those are the people who moved it, then the intention is a wrong intention. It is to actually create very confused labeling.
Right, and I wonder if that's not the case.
Well, I think it's the case. I think all these years there was no labeling. All these years there was no labeling. Now that states are starting to pass labeling laws, you suddenly get a fast forward at the national level.
Well, you know, this is such a complex issue, but, you know, when you start to just do a little bit of research on your own, you can kind of connect the dots. And I think, as you were speaking earlier about the way they have created this, you know, they want us to believe that, you know, you need a PhD and understand quantum physics and nuclear physics and be a scientist to understand how this all works. But I think that's just an added ingredient in how they want to disempower or make people believe that they are disempowered.
Absolutely, which is why we have to use three basic terms. Never see, food, and the right to know.
Exactly. Well, we'd like to leave our listeners with some action items or just some ways that they can, and some steps that they can take to really stop the globalization of food. Do you have any advice for our listeners?
The first step is the localization of food. Start getting involved. Don't expect the supermarket solution that you can walk somewhere, pick up something from the shelf, and it'll be perfect for you. The system has made sure that all the supermarket shelves are contaminated, either with chemicals or with GMOs. So begin today by creating local food systems. Begin with gardens, begin with connecting to farmers. Make a 2 to 3 year plan that in your local community, there will be a local food system. And it has to begin with seed. It has to begin with cooperation. Vector society, where every school and every community has a garden. We've done this before. It's not such an impossible task. And finally, we have to start recognizing that democracy and freedom doesn't come top down. It grows like a tree from the bottom up. So while you cultivate your organic garden, while you save your seed, while you create zones of seed freedom and cultivate gardens of resistance and gardens of hope, with that, cultivate democracy.
Exactly. And be the change you want to see.
Absolutely.
Well, Vandana, could you give us your website so people can find out more about some of the work you're doing?
Sure. The one website of Navdanya is www.navdanya.org. And a second website dedicated to the Seed Freedom Campaign, www.seedfreedom.in, which has a declaration which we invite everyone to sign, just like everyone joined the March Against Monsanto. Let's join the movement for seed freedom on which rests food freedom.
Exactly. Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on our show today, and we really admire the work you do, and you're really an inspiration to all of us to see things change in our lifetime and on our planet with our food and with humanity. Thank you for being with us today, and thank you to all our listeners. We'd love to hear from you, so if you have any comments or suggestions, go to our website at foodintegritynow.org or our Facebook page, Food Integrity Now, and we will be back next week with another great show. Thank you again, Dr. Vandana Shiva.
Thank you, Carol.
It's been a great honor to speak with one of the most committed individuals who's raising awareness about the monopolization of our food supply by Monsanto. And this is following the largest worldwide demonstration against this corporation that took place just a few days ago on May 25th, 2013. In the spirit of this historical day, we'd like to leave you with this very touching and timely video that was released on the morning of the march and has since gone viral. Please listen to these poetic words and enjoy the video on our show page. Monsantrosity is the inspiration and brainchild of Ra Mayan, otherwise known as Swamiji. He, too, was deeply inspired by the work of Dr. Vandana Shiva, as you will hear and see in this video.
Dear Monsanto, this is a message that time has come. Your time has come. This game's time is done. There's a part of me that wants to rip and tear you down, but an eye for an eye can't make the world go round. So I bring you this message with love and compassion for your reckless ways and your thoughtless action. Even though you planted seeds and poison our food, war on nature, ignore the people you screw. Here's a message to the people that work for you, who drunk your Kool-Aid so long that they think it's true. A word to employees of Monsanto. Here are some facts that you should but can't know. Like medicine, a dose of truth hurts at first. Its bitter taste could cause you to lose your thirst to work for a company in controversy. You think a protest like this comes from fantasy? Wake up, please. This is about planetary survival, to keep our species from becoming archival. I am the first person. Put myself in your shoes. So buckle up and let me take you for a cruise. Are you ready? There's a place in India called the Suicide Belt, where the swift hand of death has been cruelly dealt to over 100,000 farmers who were sold a story. How you ask, listen, it gun gets gory. This is a real story of a man named Shankar, who owned his own farm without need for bankers. One day our sales rep knocked on his door with these new seeds we promised could make him crores. We said these new seeds can do incredible wonders, increase your crop and fix all of your blunders. Innocent trust, he didn't see the plunder. This is where the story begins to turn asunder. Shankar took on loan sharks to pay for these seeds, confident now that he could get increased yields. It started out fine, but he soon realized crop needed Monsanto's fertilizer to survive. But we spent the extra money, but it wasn't enough. More hidden clauses made this new growing too tough. So the next year, when his crops failed to grow, he panicked and ran back to Monsanto. Sorry, we told him, we're not the ones to blame. Once you find some more money, we'll get you back in the game. But in the meantime, you can take another loan and a new batch of seeds, which we promise will grow. But Shankar had no money left for new seeds. Loan sharks were threatening, immune to his pleas. He was down to a choice now to give up and flee. But then these sharks would come and kill his family. In panic and shame, he grabbed their own pesticide, wrote notes to his family, and stifled his cries, and swallowed it, dying in terrifying pain. Kids watching their dad writhing, dying in shame. This is just one story of our devilish ways. Can your stomach handle another of Monsanto's play? And I wanna remind you, this is happening now. This is not just the past, this shit is still allowed. Over 1,000 farmers kill themselves every month. How can we sell a story that we know is so fucked? Can you really stay blind to what you are supporting? If so, let's examine some more of this story. Are you ready? Let's break it down. Let's break down why we're engineering our food. Is it the tale to increase supply as we've been told? Or feeding starving families in the third world? Let's see how this plan has really unfurled. So far there's been little increased supply. No long-term tests on GMO and alive. They are banned in almost all European states. And worldwide they are suffering a similar fate. So ask yourself, why are they playing us for fools? It starts with the laws of patent office rules. We've all seen debates about the patents on life. Devil's in the details, here's the edge of the knife. Once food's been engineered to make its genes unique, it's a creative act with the right to reap proprietary benefits. Like any other idea, a result of outdated laws and corrupt ideals. So when the company is issued a patent form, their exclusive right to this life form is born. And now the mission is to sell and spread the patent, like any company with a proprietary gadget. So they market these seeds with falsified claims, co-opting millions of farmers into their patent game, who plant patents right into their fertile soil. Seeds produced from these plants are banned from being re-sown. They can't be reused without Monsanto's permission. A Monsantopoly of food was always the vision. This is not about crop yield or helping the third world. It's about money, power, and control of the world. And now with the Monsanto Protection Act, you can't ban GMOs even if the facts prove that they cause adverse health effects. Removing the checks and balance, because they pay checks to ballots. What? Really care about our health, bodies, and mind? Is not all of our food sacred and divine? How can religions say they're protecting God's creations when we allow corporations to modify and misshape the very perfection gifted to a race? This Monsantrosity of owning life should never take place. Incentivizing its blatant genetic manipulation with patents and corporate conglomeration. This is a sickness we must make all aware of. Out of all the things in life, this is one I'm scared of. I believe as humanity, we can create world peace. But if our food is denatured and owned by these thieves, there'll be nothing left to own. No life force in our blood. We'll have a stew of chemicals replacing our nutritious mud. Let's not forget we are the salt of this earth. But what happens to the earth when too much salt is dispersed? My goal is not to fight or destroy Monsanto. It's to educate you on some truths you should know. Find what you want to stand for in this time. This is the way I know how, encoding truth in a rhyme. I only serve one, the Almighty Divine. And I trust that her creation was perfect and fine. So I leave it alone and allow it to grow, knowing it nurtures mind, heart, body, and soul. The march against Monsanto is about to begin, but it's a march for humanity that ultimately wins. The march against Monsanto is about to begin, but it's a march for humanity that ultimately wins. March for humanity. For all the bees, for all the animals, for all the human beings, for all the children out there being raised on GMO corn and GMO soy products who are getting sick and allergies and dying. Food is built perfect and divine, and it's nurtured us for billions of years. There's no need to genetically modify it and risk and endanger all of the species and all of the people on our planet. It's unnecessary. This is not about Monsanto. They're just the people who are perpetrating this agenda. This is about humanity, and this is a chance for us all to rise and stand up for something so important, our food, our water, our air. Much love. This is the truth. Ramayan. Swamiji. Peace out.